So.
It has to agree.
It has wishes, but.
Well, all I can say is that you're going to start talking about the disclosure. We just had a 2-day session with our general advisory council, where we also devoted considerable time on the need to streamline disclosure requirements. I actually thought it was one of the best discussions we ever had in the advisory council. I don't have a long history with the advisory council, but of those meetings that I have participated in, this was truly one of the most stimulating and I think useful meetings, with broad consensus around the table about the need to do something, the fact that we do realize that people do not see the woods for the many trees of the 4,000 disclosure requirements that we have. Also a widespread realization that this is not something that can be addressed with a quick fix. But just taking a pair of scissors and cutting off disclosure requirements, because we all do realize that most disclosure requirements came into being for some good reason, and that the crux of the solution is probably much more in finding tools to better make use of the concept of materiality and giving preparers and auditors more comfort in not disclosing everything that's there, but making good use of the requirements that are there. So I thought it was a very good meeting, which will be very helpful for the ISB, and I truly hope that you, with your perspective, can help us along in this issue as well, along with the many other issues that you're going to discuss today. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Hans. So we've got very pleased to have Ron Lott from the FASB and Mario Bella from EFRAG. As you almost certainly are aware, both those people are doing extensive work on disclosures, I think working towards discussion papers, and very pleased to have them come along and present what they've been doing so far. They were both at the Advisory Council yesterday, and we've got some questions for you afterwards, but let me hand it over to Mario, is it, first?
Thanks, Steve. And I thank you, everyone, for having us here today to discuss our project. I should start, has everyone got a copy of the slides?
I think Hillary's just walked out to go and get that.
Okay, I should start, you can do without the slides for the moment, but just a general disclaimer that the views Ron and I express today are our personal views and not the views of EFRAG, the ANC, the ASB, or the FASB, and those organisations only reach views once they've been through an extensive due process. So we have two closely related projects. There's the EFRAG ANC ASB project, which is a framework for the notes to the financial statements, and the FASB project, which is a disclosure framework project. So essentially, they are the scope of both projects is very, very similar, and it really came out of there was a meeting of national standard setters, global national standard setters, last year, and we presented on our disclosure framework project, and the FASB were in the audience, and they said, or they're part of that meeting, said, you know, actually, we're doing exactly the same thing. Why don't we coordinate our efforts? And so that's what we've been doing ever since. So in terms of the cooperation between standard setters, and one of the things that came up at the Advisory Council yesterday was a sense that there was a series of competing projects on disclosure framework. And in fact, there aren't. In fact, we're all very well coordinated and working together. So the project team and some of our project team are in the audience today from EFRAG and the ASB, work in conjunction with the FASB project team. We've had meetings with the ICAS New Zealand Institute folk that have worked on the excess baggage document. We're bringing forward the ideas that the ANC put forward in their report.
The ASB or the FRC in the UK have done a lot of work on corporate reporting, on custom cluster. Again, we're leveraging off all that work. We're aware of all the reports that have been done by many organisations, you know, the CFA Institute, FEI, KPMG put out a report late last year. So we're really building on all that, trying to build on all that work and being cognizant of what's already taking place. We have an expert advisory panel, which is made up of users, preparers, auditors, and we also have ESMA as a European regulator there, and also the IAASB as an observer. And the FASB has a similar a resource group with a similar composition. So we're really trying to, I can't stress enough, but we're really trying to build on the work that's been done by others, because we think there's been a lot of work done on diagnosing the problem. Everyone knows what the problem is, and we see no value in preparing another discussion paper that says, geez, there's such a big problem with disclosures. So we really want to try and start moving towards finding a solution. So in terms of what we're trying to achieve, in terms of the FRAG ANC ASB project, we're trying to develop a framework for well-coordinated and effective disclosures. Our emphasis is on improving quality. Hopefully, that will also address this issue about volume, but our priority is not just to, you know, do a slash and burn and get rid of disclosures by X percent. That's not our intention. Our intention really is to improve the quality of what's there, the communication to investors. And also we want to impact on practice, because a big part of this is a behavioural issue, and you can only address the behavioural issue partly by writing and issuing accounting standards. It also, a big part of this is getting people to do things differently and approach things differently. So it's very much about changing the behaviour of preparers, auditors and regulators, and a lot of that does come down to materiality. I'll talk about that some more later.
The FASB has the same objective. We'd like to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of disclosures. So we believe that if we can do that, that will result in reduced volume, though that's not directly the objective. We hope that we will be able to issue a concept statement for the board to use in setting disclosure requirements to make them more consistent and to provide a well-reasoned basis. We would also hope that, and we are working on enhancing the reporting entity's decisions on, as opposed to disclosing an entire list of information, just disclosing the ones that are important to that particular entity. And we also are working on organizing and formatting notes. That one is not something that we can actually issue as a requirement. That would be more of implementation guidance or something of that nature. And finally, if it is possible, and I'm not certain it is, it's certainly possible to work with the SEC to do this, to reduce the redundancies. I'm not certain what the results are going to be. There are always legal impediments, at least in the U.S., for doing that sort of thing. But we are attempting to do all of those things to make the package shorter so that it's easier to find the important information and perhaps add information that might be lacking now.
So just to put in context what we're looking at, so if you're following the slides, we're on to the next slide in terms of what we're looking at. So if you take the first line there, there's obviously the universe of information that users have access to in making decisions. And then financial reporting obviously is a subset of that. IFRS financial statements are again a subset of that, and so is management commentary. Within Europe, IFRS only governs the way in which we prepare financial statements. So our project is very much anchored in looking at that aspect of it, and only that aspect. And there are other projects, such as the Integrated Reporting Project, which is looking at the whole span of information, but we're just looking at the financial statements. And then we have the primary financial statements as defined in IS1. We're not dealing with that. We're taking that as a given. So we're not opening up the whole issue of financial statement presentation. We're taking what's in the primaries as given and just focusing on the notes. And there we're trying to isolate the information that belongs through belongs in the notes through a series of decision processes. So we're trying to bring some discipline to the way we think about the notes to the financial statements. So on to the next slide in terms of, well, what do we mean by framework? Because, you know, people love talking about frameworks, but it can mean a whole manner of things. So this is what we mean by a framework, and it has three kind of decision elements. The first is really the set of decisions a standard setter needs to make about what's to be included in the notes. The key driver there is relevance, because we think you need to start with what information do users need to understand the financial statements. So we've taken a fairly old-fashioned view of the purpose of the notes, and we think it's absolutely critical to be very precise about what we mean about the purpose of the notes, because over time they've become a bit like a haggis of information. You know, all sorts of things have been stuffed in there, and they don't necessarily have any bearing on what's in the primary financial statements. And the notes were originally meant to be footnotes to the primary financial statements. They're meant to explain, elaborate, amplify what was in the primary financial statements. And that connection has been somewhat lost. And we've seen all sorts of information that doesn't actually have, you know, it's so generic, it doesn't actually tell you anything. So we're really trying to improve that. And to do that, we've set up a whole series of relevance criteria. So we're taking the principle of relevance and then trying to draw down to what does that actually mean, because it's, you know, a very high-level, broad principle. We need something more granular. Then the second set of decisions are really about the decisions the entity makes about information it includes in its notes. So there we want to strengthen the concept of materiality. We really want to strengthen the relevance of what's there so that it has utility for users. And then finally, want to address communication, and this comes up particularly in a lot of the outreach we've done with our panel and the resource group in the US, is really to improve the communication. And the FRC has done a lot of work in the UK on just very simple things about how you can improve, you know, communication through the way that the material in the notes is organised and presented.
Can I step in just a second? What we've done is, I don't think there's anything in it that's inconsistent with what FRAG has done. We aren't doing it exactly the same way, where they have defined a boundary. We've produced a series of questions to identify things that we think are within the boundary. But so that if you see the two documents, they may not be identical. They may be, but they may not. But I don't think there's anything inconsistent in there.
As ours is a discussion paper, that will be one of the questions about where should that boundary be. And particularly in the area where you get into information about the entity as a whole, I don't think there's much dispute about providing information about specific line items, but more general information, you know, what's the entity's business model and all that sort of information, which relates to the entity as a whole. Does that belong in the notes, or is that really management commentary? So that will be the sorts of questions we will try to approach in the discussion later. I'll skip through these slides fairly rapidly. So the first one really is trying to explain the process of, again, trying to bring some discipline to the way the standard setter thinks about disclosures. Because historically, disclosures are the things that the boards get to after they're completely exhausted having argued through recognition and measurement. They kind of stumble over, okay, we better deal with disclosures. And we usually end up with a good list, a list of things that people think are kind of good things to disclose. But what we're trying to do here is to bring some discipline to the way that's thought about. So the first filter really is the purpose of the notes. Stepping back and saying, okay, well, what information relates to the notes? And then we've come up with four categories. Providing a description of the item, how the item is used in the business. So if you've got a truck, is the truck held for resale or is it held for use in the business? How does it link with other things in the balance sheet or in the income statement? The accounting principles and methods, so what accounting principles did you use? What methods, what assumptions underpin, particularly if there's estimates involved? And a breakdown, so roll forwards, but also disaggregation of numbers. And then looking at, so you don't need to, we don't think you need to, the standard setter needs to always require these things, and that's where our relevance criteria come in, because some things are obvious and you don't need to introduce a whole lot of detail. And so the next slide then tries to replicate the same sorts of thinking, but this is now how the preparer applies the requirements. So here we're trying to expand on what we mean by materiality. And again, trying to start very much from, well, what information do users need to make decisions? And again, having regard to the purpose of the notes so that, you know, preparers don't stuff in a whole lot of information that's not particularly relevant. Now, we think materiality is absolutely key, and in a way, we'd like to come up with another word because we think it's one of the most misunderstood terms. And we've been astonished, really, in our discussions just how misunderstood materiality is.
Mario, why have you switched from relevance in the first slide to materiality in the second? Why didn't you just use relevance again?
Can I suggest? Yep. Relevance is a broad term used by the standard setter in general. Materiality, as we said it in the concept statement, is an entity-specific way of looking at relevance. In other words, what's relevant to that particular entity instead of what's relevant to financial statements in general.
And I'd certainly misunderstood materiality. Yeah, I would have thought that relevance could work just as well for the preparer as well.
Well, it could. If instead of saying, is it material to you, you could say, is it relevant in the context of your financial statement?
Because we'll get back to this with the ESMA presentation later in the morning, where they're talking about materiality.
Yeah. And that's why, in a way, we'd like to somehow come up with another term that really, you know,
But I just think relevance works for it.
The bottom line is this something that can influence a user's decision?
Yeah.
No matter what word you use, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Or significance.
That's another one that we've, at least at the FSB, have argued over the meaning of that word, but I know your point, and you're right.
Yeah. And one of the things that we've been debating is whether or not this whole issue of scalability, because at the moment we see disclosure requirements very much as a kind of, you know, single point. And should there be a kind of range of requirements depending on how significant an item is? But that's an idea particularly that FASB has been kicking around. So in terms of the outcome of the projects, for us it's to come for the FRAG ANC ASB project, it's to issue a discussion paper, hopefully by the middle of this year, which sets out a kind of broad architecture and sets out the alternatives. So we're not trying to come up with a fixed point. We think a lot of these issues need to be debated, but in a careful way. And so that's the aim of our discussion paper. And then depending what comes out of that due process, we'll determine what FRAG and its partners does next. Oh, sorry. One further point. One of the things that we've been cautioned by from the start of the project is to make sure that whatever we come up with actually works. So not some nice theoretical construct that actually doesn't work in practice. So we've been trying to test our ideas as we've been working through. So what we've done is we've retro-tested. So we've applied our framework to a number of existing standards, like IFRS 7, and looked at what sort of disclosure requirements would you get by applying our framework. And what we've discovered is we actually get something fairly close, but actually this time we know why we get there. There are some differences, and I think it will be good to have some debate about what those differences are. And we're also comparing our results with the ICAS New Zealand Institute report and also the work done by others like the ANC in France in their reduced disclosure regime and also the reduced disclosure regimes being adopted in other parts of the world. So the UK, as part of its changes to UK GAAP, are considering a reduced disclosure regime. The Australians have as well. So we want to see how this can be applied in a number of settings. And I think the FASB are also thinking about in the context of interim reporting.
Yes.
The plan for both groups is, at least the hope, is to issue a discussion paper sometime in the middle of this year. And ours would be called an invitation to comment. It won't have, at least I don't anticipate that it will have board conclusions. There will be, it will describe what the board's thought about and some general ideas. Ultimately, it may end up being two or three different sorts of pronouncements, but we haven't worried too much about that yet. The key point is to get the thoughts out there and get comments on them. We are working with FRAG. It's possible we will issue exactly the same document. It's also possible that, as I said, that will be very consistent but not identical. That remains to be seen.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. I think we're done.
Well, thank you both. Interesting work that's being done. We obviously don't have a project on disclosure. It's part of the agenda consultation. I suspect it's not a question of whether we do a project on disclosure. It's more an issue of when and how and precisely what we do. At the moment, we're monitoring what others are doing. Holger is doing that for us. So we're sort of involved, but we're not closely involved in the deliberations that are going on. But we're certainly very interested in what's being done. So let me open it up to your comments, discussion. I guess what we're interested in is, should we prioritize this? How high up on our list of priorities in terms of future projects should this come? What should we be doing? What's the objective? What's the scope? Is it a conceptual framework issue? Is it changing standards? What should we be looking to do? What about short-term versus long-term? This is a long-term project. Are we talking 5 years to go through a whole process to develop a framework-level project on it, or are there short-term quick wins that we could do? Are there certain things that we should be looking to start right now and then have some sort of longer-term project, more of it, which is more framework-based? So a number of unanswered questions that we have, and be very interested in your views on those that I've just mentioned and anything else that you'd like to raise. Go ahead, Jen.
I'm always a bit puzzled about this. I don't know about other people's experience, but I have not heard over a long period of time users clamouring for a cut in the notes at the back of the reports. So I start off from a slightly sceptical position. I mean, the fact is that users want stuff that's, you want to be consistent over time, you want to compare with peers, you want granularity. You know, that ends up adding up to quite a lot of detailed notes, which are hugely helpful. It's like a supermarket. You know, you don't start at the beginning and read to the end. Obviously, you pick and choose what you want, and if you want to drill down, you want granularity. So I'm, you know, that's one word of caution. I think all the activity that's going on, if it can help companies and auditors not to just bung things in just in case it might be interesting, great. Maybe that will affect behavior, reduce boilerplate, reduce duplication. But I suspect that if anybody came up with the idea of drastically reducing requirements for footnotes in the original sense that you described, I don't think users would be all that happy, actually.
That's consistent with what others have told us. That's the reason our objective isn't to reduce the volume. But at the same time, some users have, you're right, very few, if any, have said disclosure is just too long. Some have said, well, I skipped this note because I don't understand it. There's too many words there. So that's another way of saying, gee, tell me just what's important, not all this other boilerplate language. And ideally, that's what we would do, would be eliminate the boilerplate stuff and identify only the important stuff. Can we achieve that? I don't know, but that's what we would like to do.
I thought the way that you described the project was very encouraging, because you are focusing on quality and not just slash and burn. I entirely agree with points Jane has made. I think its usefulness is initially as a framework for standard setters to apply when they are debating. And I was interested by what you said, Mario, about sort of retro-testing it and saying that you would have come up with broadly the same things, but you actually now understand why you got there from a sort of a proper process perspective. So I think that could be very helpful. Materiality clearly is an issue. And I mean, you know, like Jane has said, I've never really heard users say, you know, well, I just don't want all this detail. But I certainly have had conversations with people where I've said, well, you know, have you read this? Or they say, can I find this information? And I go to a particular note and get to the end of three pages of disclosure and you are no wiser. So there's quite a lot of, I suspect, redundant disclosure or stuff that's not as helpful as it could be. So again, I'm not sure that sort of cutting volume is necessarily the right focus, but I mean cutting clutter is another way of putting it. But quality, I think, is the key.
The other thing that bothers me with this whole conversation is how do you get quality? So I'm echoing both my colleagues' points, and it would be wonderful if you could write a standard saying, please provide high quality disclosure on the things that we really that really are material or relevant, and forget the rest. The challenge to me in these type of projects is how do you write a standard that says that? What we seem to have to do is to give people a long list of things that have to be there, because preparers don't exercise enough judgment in what they're putting in. Whether it's the preparers, the auditors, or the regulators that are watching behind them, I'm not sure. But there seems to be this attitude, we'll throw everything in. Disclosure more and more feels like a shopping list of things that they had to take off on and no coherent presentation. And if you want an example, read the financial statements of a company and then read a board presentation. And the board presentation is a study in how can we say the most things in so few words. And they're fundamentally different documents and different processes.
And that's why what we're trying to do with materiality is come up with a series of indicators or factors you need to consider in making that judgment. Because I think at the moment it's a bit of a black box. You know, everyone says, oh, yeah, everyone understands what materiality is. But what we're trying to do is actually step through that and say, okay, well, you know, you're making a judgment about materiality, you need to have regard to all these things. So that's not necessarily coming up with a set of rules, but really trying to articulate the principle a bit more clearly and really trying to get it, changing the behaviour in terms of making it much more entity-specific. And so one of the things, just picking up on your point about quality, you know, at the moment you see things like, you know, acquisitions, you have a business combination, and that information is scattered across maybe three or four different notes. So could you organise the information better so that it's all in one note and it actually tells you what happened, rather than a kind of focus on compliance to make sure we can kind of tick that, you know, we've met all the requirements and various standards.
As a user-oriented person versus an audit-oriented person, I've always suspected the problem was the auditors.
Certainly part of it.
And their definition of materiality and their legal liability concerns, I think, is driving a lot of this. But not being from that background, I'm not sure that's correct. I just suspect it's correct.
We think, or we're fairly sure, it's a combination of several people. I mean, the at least in the U.S., the entity's own lawyers itself will insist that you leave something in if it was there last year, for example. The regulators will ask you a question if there's something that's missing that they would have expected to be there, whether it's material or not. They don't know whether it's material or not. and the auditors will also have their checklist. So you're absolutely right. It's a struggle to change behavior.
Yeah, and we will really have to involve the enforcers.
And no doubt about it. Projects. And we have engaged.
They need to give cover for preparers to use the judgment.
Jed and Larry?
Well, I was going to ask the same thing, which is, you know, how closely involved in this process have the SEC been? Because, you know, they ultimately are going to determine what's going to be in and out of the scope in the US, and increasingly we're probably going to see more regulatory oversight in other jurisdictions, and so I'd expect the same issue to be there. I like what you're doing here in terms of the approach, and I think it is a relevant thing to do, even if only so it creates a framework when you're writing new standards to make sure you all the issues in disclosure. The observation I'd make is that the notes have become less useful at communication over the years. As you described it, you used to have the primary financial statements, there'd be lots of note numbers next to it. You'd go into the right place in the accounts, and quite often you could flick there in 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. Now you physically can't find the information without Adobe search function. And there's no logical sequence to where that note is going to be. So, you know, in the old days, you'd say, okay, it's a long-term liability. I'll go almost to the back because, you know, it's always assets first and then liabilities, and now I can look up that note. But there's actually no logical sequence to the notes quite often. And so it isn't a useful communication device. You get the data, and I agree with what Jane and Peter have said, that you don't necessarily want to lose that data, but I think there is a risk that many businesses are reporting information that no one really cares about.
Mary?
Thanks to you. First, I think that it's great that the board is doing it. It's long overdue for all the reasons stated. I think there's a bunch of discussion here about the outcome, but you need to think about why the process has been, project has been originated in the first place. I guess I was walking in, Hans mentioned that this is a project that both the users, the auditors, and the preparers are highly favored on. They're approaching this project for different reasons, but it's actually encouraging that they're all thinking about and supporting of the project, which could at least on paper assure engagement and reasonable outcome. If you recall, when I joined this group, I presented the disclosure framework. This project was originated, at least from the FASB side, by the ITOP, and this was a project we earmarked about 6 years ago, and we had various layers. Each one, you know, it has different objectives, whether it's going to help the auditors, whether it's going to help the preparers. It has many, many objectives that coming together. It's not a single dimension, including presentation. And I think there's, you know, I will try to answer some of Steve's earlier questions to us, whether it's conceptual. Absolutely, it's conceptual. Should it be short-term versus long-term? I do think there's many, as we outlined here, including an example that I prepared at the time for this committee on pension disclosures, how certain things could be affected on a short-term basis, including some quick wins. Many elements, was said earlier, already existing in current financial reporting. And what I want to do is just kind of the roll the timeline back to what we started thinking about. I think it would be useful just to think about, you know, why we were thinking about it. So from a user perspective, to Blair's point, you open a financial statement and you get 6 pages of disclosures of pension fund, right? Discount rates, mortality rates, shoe size of the employees, and their, whatever it is, you know, you get so much information there that you can get, and let's say it's a car manufacturer, and then you look at the warranty reserve, and you get one paragraph, and you don't know what's the estimated discount, not discounted, what they change, how they change, and then you step back and you say, okay, why is it? Is it the auditors decided to do that? I don't think that's the case. It has nothing to do with auditor. Is it management? I don't think it's management, because management went to some playbook, and the playbook told them this is how you need to play the disclosures. And the lawyers are telling them, hey, don't do anything beyond what's in this playbook, because if you do anything, you can get a slap on the wrist. So I think it's a combined effort to start thinking about how, starting with this board, how do you manufacture your product? What do you think should be in a product? Why do you think it should be there? Under what circumstances it should be provided? And then you provide the roadmap, as we know, to everybody else. And some of the thought that we had in thinking through that was associated with beyond standards themselves and thinking about the standard is applying some principle to a user. For example, you've got a bunch of accounting issues that are associated with some contingent capital, being an ARO, income taxes, other contingent obligations, and you can write the standard that's associated. If you happen to have some contingent obligation that based on some contingent payout, this is what you disclose before you even go into scalability. And by the way, Appendix A provides an exhibit that illustrates it for ARO, income tax, or something else. Everything else, figure out on your own. So you don't no longer have an escape route. If you have other contingent obligation, you should disclose zero until, you know, Steve comes out and writes a standard. So it allows standard setting to also be proactive rather than reactive and not writing disclosures to rectify the issue of the past, but rather the issue of the future. That's number one. The other issue was disclosure overload. You know, some people such as want a lot of information. Some say, you know, when you give me too much information, I'm getting lost. Cut everything, including users. Some users telling you the same thing. So there's some element as far as almost when you go to disclosure, you get a familiar loop to disclosure. This is where you see how what's in the number. So think about it any way you want to think about it, but the building blocks should be, you know, you can have a collapsible footnote type, right? And then you can sort it in the technology. First section would be simply, what's in the account? What's the mix? Or you can equate it to some sort of already existed in critical accounting policies. What's in the number, right? The second level should be roll forward, because you have for many items. So if it's material, you want to start beginning, ending, blah, 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 you just list it and you roll it forward. And then the third element that's already existing, I'm just making it up, right? You can think about, this is what I put as a proposal, but you can think about other building blocks. The third level could be estimates and assumptions, right? So you want to go through granular, say what's the estimates and assumption, what's the variability, what's the you know, what's the range around the number, put it there. So if you're a user that just want to see what's in the number, you go to, it's very, very user-friendly in the context of how you manufacture disclosures and put it in the context of where it is. Simply, you know where to find the information. So from quick wins, I think you have many. From long-term, I think you also have a long-term proposal. So just think about it. Certain elements that already somebody mentioned IAS-1 and financial statement presentation, it could borrow certain elements from that, but it's not necessarily should be the whole shebang, if that makes sense. I just think this background might should provide some insight.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I want to add to one thing here. I think I basically subscribe what has been said around the table, and I it's very encouraging, the project. But I think, obviously, key players here are preparers. I mean, they know better than nobody else what is relevant for the companies and for them. So obviously, things that might be relevant one quarter, maybe was not relevant 2 years ago. And not just what is relevant that particular quarter, is the impact that is going to have what happened in that quarter or in that particular time in the future. And that's really, I think, for us, for users, is very key to know how things might happen. I mean, things that is happening are going to have an impact in the long term for the company. So I think this is something, I don't know how to structure all those things in the shopping list or whatever you want to call. But obviously the attitude, the willingness of the preparers to be transparent, and to be able to show those things is really key for us. I mean, otherwise, we see a company had a problem and it has a fine this year or this quarter, but what is going to be the impact for the coming 2 years? And that we don't know unless the preparers really are willing to tell us. And for us, that's really relevant, and that's materiality, right? You know, whatever word you want to use.
Okay. Dennis, Vincent, Sue all want to get in. Oh, Dennis, you didn't.
Well, the only thing I was wondering, and that kind of ties in with Javier's points, is whether you can, in the scope of the project, whether you should actually include the whole MD&A issue. Whether it's actually possible to separate the primary financial statements and the notes from the MD&A, if the disclosure framework is also more kind of business oriented, kind of something happens, you're going to have additional disclosure or discussion in the MD&A, but what does it mean for the notes to the financial statements? So is that is the scope of the project is exclusively primary financial statements and notes, but have you considered the relation with the MD&A and management commentary?
We've had a lot of discussion about that. And there are various views about, should we have looked at MD&A as well? And the decision was taken that clearly we should just focus on the notes. at a future date, we may look at the relevant, you know, how this applies to management commentary. But it's important that we sort out the note. Well, we think it's important you sort out the notes first, because even if you do look at MD&A as well, you still have to decide, okay, so what should you include in the notes and what should you include in MD&A, or, you know, which one? So.
Thanks, Steve. To some of your questions, I think this should be a project that the ISB undertakes as well. So it needs to be on the table, and you need to make sure you're not being, or rather you're not playing catch up with other people coming up with the proposals. I like the framework that's been proposed here, the main elements, the relevance, materiality, and communication. I just make some comments on the relevance. I think what would be important here is to have a more robust process of user engagement as well in terms of defining the relevance. And I would, for example, what Neri has been talking about, articulating aspects of what's relevant for users, I think that needs to be captured somewhat, because we've got a perspective here of the standard set and preparers. So if there's also an articulation of the user perspective, that would be helpful. And also it would be important to distinguish between different types of users and the needs that they may have. Then in terms of quick wins, I think the focus really could be on the communication element. And I'd agree with some of the comments that have been made as well by Jed, for example, on focusing on how what we've got currently can be improved to help users understand the notes better.
What do you mean exactly by that? What could we do in terms of changing a standard, for example, in terms of quick wins?
So within some of the proposals that have been made, for example, with regards to cutting clutter within the existing framework and making the notes more understandable, I think taking those on board would be helpful.
I mean, is that something for us to do? Because it seems to me that of the three things that Mario set out, that the first one clearly is the standard setter, but the materiality, well, maybe that's partly us, but that's other people as well. And then the third one on communication, is that the standard setter? So, like, clearly numbering the notes and having a sensible order, do we write a standard on that or what?
This presentation, I know presentation has tended to focus on the main financial statements, but I was just wondering if you could have a presentation approach to the notes. Is that something that you'd see falling under your purview then?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking you guys.
I think that could help if there was a presentation related to the notes. But you're right, a lot of it has to do with the preparers themselves, and in terms of understanding what users need and correspondingly providing it with the aim to communicating to users.
Well, my personal view is that it's all rather antiquated, primary financial statements, notes, and maybe there's a different way of thinking about it. Maybe there's sort of secondary financial statements or primary notes. Maybe there's stuff that should be in an appendix. Maybe there's different ways of organizing things. So, yeah, I think that's a longer-term project. I'm not sure we can have a quick win on that.
You need to get the primary statement sorted out first then, don't you?
Sue?
Yeah, and there's a lot of good work, just picking up on that point, in terms of moving notes around, reordering. Certainly there's a lot of change that I'm seeing, probably focused more on the UK these days, so on UK companies. I think the reporting season will reveal lots of examples that we could look at along those lines. Reordering notes, putting accounting policies in the notes to which they relate, that sort of stuff that can be looked at. So I suppose from a standard setter standpoint, it's probably longer term, but some of the movement's already going to start taking place, and we'll be reacting to that and commenting on that. I do think there's lots of quick wins. I think things like net debt reconciliations, we might have mentioned a few times.
Yeah, I've got your letter here.
But there's lots of other little things. I think, you know, I made a presentation last night talking about debt and, just relating debt maturity tables to the debt that's sitting on the balance sheet and telling us why they're so different. Well, obviously there's discounting, but there's lots of other things going on, like hedge adjustments. You know, can I tell, looking at a set of accounts, what amount actually needs to be repaid? Can be difficult because of the various accounting mechanisms, and just needs to be thought through a little bit more holistically, I suppose, in terms of making sure that the basics can be answered from that. I'd very much support the board taking on a project, and I think a lot of these activities, the however many projects we call this one, this project, no matter how many directions I suppose it goes in, it'll provide, I would say, useful input to the IESB to then think about that materiality and some of these behavioral aspects that should be taken into consideration in anything that you would take on as a project. I do think it probably needs a bit of framework and some supplement in the individual standards. So I'm not sure you'll ever get away from putting something in the individual standards to give some guidance maybe in terms of what, if you have a framework document or big, how that then relates to the that then relates to the topic. And on the specific project, I've been a little bit concerned. I don't actually see how you can focus on just the notes and not talk about presentation, because conveying information can be done by conveying it on the face or it's going to be and, isn't it, but, and presenting some information in the notes. So I'll have to say, and I've said it before to you guys, I'm a bit disappointed in the narrowing of that. I think it's much more difficult to bring in MD&A and other aspects, but at least sort of financial statements could have been ring-fenced. And I've understood also there's an emphasis on, so what came across as no forward-looking information, only transactions sort of existing at the balance sheet date. So it seemed to me that it was quite a backward historical shift to it in bringing the scoping in, and I apologize, I missed the presentation, so I don't know if you covered that. But I think that, you know, that would take away, you know, if we think about pensions, we want to all know all the glorious assumptions and all, but we also want to know if the company could tell us, you know, what the payment stream is going to look like in future. That would be future. Would that fall under the scope of this?
Mario and Ron, just to Sue's point about changing individual standards, how do you envisage this playing out? Is it a chapter in the conceptual framework? Is it that plus a rewrite of the disclosure section of every standard? What eventually do you see actually changing?
We will expect that there would be a concept statement to tell the board how to go through this decision process, but that itself wouldn't change any disclosures. It would certainly be applied in future standards, but it would also, the board's also said that they want us to go back and apply it in existing standards to standard by standard apply this to see if we get the same disclosures. Now, that sounds like it might be quick, because the staff could go through in this decision process for the board, but they're board decisions in every single one. So, you know, it says generally tell us this. Well, exactly how, exactly which aspects of it, the board would have to decide. So the answer to your question, I guess, is yes, it's going to be all of those things.
Okay, Pat wants to come in. I also want to ask Darrell about, from a preparer's perspective, because when somebody mentioned regulators earlier on, you got very animated. So I was curious as to why. So I'd like to come and get your perspective, but Pat first.
I'm going to ask a question, and I guess in my question you'll understand and know what my perspective is based on some of the observations that have been made to date. If somebody gave you a pile of money, $1 million, £10 million, and said, I want you to invest it in 10 companies, and you began the process of investigating opportunities, and you picked up the financial statements. That was the only source of information you were permitted to use for this exercise. Would you be interested in the following? I'm reading the notes to a company's financial statements here through XBRL, SEC XBRL app. Inventories are stated at the lower of cost, computed using the first in, first out method, or market. If the cost of the inventories exceeds their market value, provisions are made currently for the difference between the cost and the market value. The company's inventories consist primarily of components of finished goods in all periods, for all periods presented. Is that what you want to know about? In my mind, that's kind of the analogy in my mind is, how does a car engine work? You know, it's the combination of gasoline and air. There's a combustion inside a cylinder, makes pistons go up and down, turns a crankshaft, makes wheels roll. That's kind of the analogy I'm thinking of. This is telling you how the financial statements run, if you will. But it doesn't help me make an investment decision. So in my mind, this is the piece of this project that has to be addressed. And I guess I'm asking you whether you agree with me. What do I want to know about inventories? What do I want to know about PP&E? What do I want to know about accounts receivable? These are things that might have a bearing on my investment decision, but are they first order or priority pieces of information? Or are they parts of the foundation that, you know, I might want to go to and refer to? When I think of accounts receivable, I give you an example going back 25 years ago when I did a businessman's review, a due diligence exercise for an acquisition that a company was making. They actually asked me to do two things in the process. They said, look at their accounts receivable and tell me what percentage of the receivables they collect and how quickly. And do they offer special terms to any particular customers? Are there unique classes of receivables? That's what they wanted to know, whether the receivables were valid and whether they were collectible and how fast. I don't see that information in the notes, and that's all relevant to historical information. It has nothing to do with forward-looking information. That's not MD&A stuff. The notes of the financial statements don't answer those questions. You have to pull and tease and perhaps do calculations. I think an investor should be able to readily extract that information. I want to know whether or not you agree.
Anybody disagree?
I think the list of accounting policies at the beginning of the notes has got very long and is boilerplate. Sure, that could go to the web, unless there's a change, in which case, wonderful, just have two sentences, or one sentence, or two if there's been a change. But of course one needs the building blocks in order to start to make those calculations. So
Do you need to know that they value inventories on FIFO to make the investment decision?
Yes, you potentially do, but you don't need it in the place where you found it. You need it in the inventory note where it says, you know, here's the number. It's valued on a LIFO or a FIFO basis.
Do you need other information about inventories that isn't there?
Well, you need a lot of numbers, for example.
You do need numbers. Okay.
Yeah. So I think we're sort of assuming that we've got the numbers elsewhere, and you're just picking the note that hasn't got the numbers.
But again, with inventories, you don't get, in the same way that what's the information you need on accounts receivable, you don't get the information on stock turn. You know, because you're interested in stock turn, how quickly do you turn it over?
Right.
But the point is, you know, what proportion of it's slow moving? So have you got 80% of it that's turning every day and 20% that's been there for 3 years? What is the nature?
Should the
of
notes
inventory
answer those questions, Jed, or is that something that,
well, it kind of
belongs somewhere else?
If you were buying a business, your example of what are the things that people do when they do proper due diligence in M&A, they get different information than the information that's presented in the accounts and backward-looking information. Are we aiming to reproduce due diligence level information in the primary financial statements, which is a sort of a full expose of everything about the business every year?
That's not the question
available
I asked. That's not
well,
the
it's,
question
it's
I
not
asked.
Far off, because that's some not, of that accounts receivable data.
All it is, all I'm asking is, should you be entitled to certain information about inventory or accounts receivable, okay, not the company's business plans?
I'm going to ask you to take this offline.
I want you to think about that. I want to think about that question.
I want Saichi first to comment, then Dan, if you want to make a comment very briefly, because we've got the impairment team waiting outside. And Ian, I don't know if you want to say anything about the way we're going to go on this in the future, whether you have any sort of ideas. But Saichi first.
Thank you. One thing I identified with regard to the materiality in disclosure by talking with Japanese analysts is the concept of industry. For example, when we are talking about the disclosure requirement of the revenue recognition, many of my analysts said that they only need the disclosures for such industries like software development, shipping, construction, in which the long-term contract is really the core of the businesses. For the other companies in other industries, even though by some standard it is long-term contract material, they say, no, I don't want to see it, I don't need it. I think same thing can be said about the financial instruments. It's sort of the redundant money investments in non-financial institutions. We don't see it, this disclosure about the impairments, because they are not the core of their businesses. So this concept of industry, if you can incorporate it very well in the definition of materiality, I think will help us and also the help reduce the feeling of the burden that many preparers are feeling right now.
Just
speaking personally, when I look at a set of accounts, I pick up the entire document and I start looking at it and it prompts a number of questions. And I look through the entire document to try and find the answers to those questions. So I find it difficult that you're limiting your exercise to a small part of the document. It's more difficult to see how I think it might be easier to look at the whole document. I think the problem we've got is that often we'll find the information, and when we find the information, you're more comfortable to invest in the business. But then, often you don't find the information. People are hiding behind the boilerplate answers. And any rules that we put together, we get back to the issue that was raised earlier. How much information do management want to give? If they want to answer all the questions, they can. If they don't want to, they can. It's very difficult for you.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why we think a big part of this is behavioural. Doesn't matter what rules you write, nothing will change. Some behaviours, like companies will only tell you what they want to tell you. You can't force them to go beyond the sort of compliance.
Okay, Ian, any final thoughts from you?
Yes, thanks, Steve. We're at an interesting point as a board. We're in the middle of a gender consultation process. We're hopefully finishing off some of our major convergence projects, and we're sitting and looking to the future. So on the agenda consultation, this topic has come out quite strongly. In fact, almost unanimously, I think, is something we should tackle. Concepts is the other bit, and then two questions arise, whether this is part of concepts or is it part of standard setting, and the other one, which really, Mark, you've just referred to, what sort of scope should we have when we talk about it, which is really hard because we do have limitations on what we can do. So the indications we're getting and decisions have to be made going forward is that people would like to see us tackling this as a topic. The other thing we're looking at the same time is how we tackle topics. Once we've decided what we're taking on board, how we actually approach it. And we're still in a thinking stage and a formative stage, but the thinking's moving towards putting more items on our research agenda, and with a research agenda using outside sources. So the sort of work we've got being done by EFRAG and FASB and the others, there were five who presented yesterday, I think, on this topic, would be very useful, and perhaps they would be directly involved so that it wouldn't be an isolated ISB, and perhaps the users could be involved as well, and you know, we need to think that through. So that by the time we actually take a standard setting topic, and as I say, there's a debate whether this is a conceptual topic or a standard setting, but for a standard setting one, we will have had a lot of discussion. It would have probably led to a discussion paper formulated by a wide range of people. And so by the time we take it onto the agenda, we've got a fair idea of what the problems are, whether they're solvable, and maybe even a vague idea of what the solution is. So that's the context, but I think my personal view is there's not much doubt we'll take this on in some form or other going forward. This won't happen overnight, but by towards the last quarter of this year, we should have a solid idea of how we're moving forward.
Okay, we need to move on to impairment. Can I thank Ron and Mario for taking the time to come along here today? Much appreciated. I think strong support from everybody here for what you're doing. Look forward to reading the papers when they come out, sooner rather than later, I hope. And I'm sure we'll discuss this again in this committee, so maybe after the papers have been published, we can at some point later in the year return to it and have a more of an in-depth discussion about the specifics. Thanks again.
Thanks.
Okay, when they look in this direction, we're going to get the impairment team in.
That's a small topic to do.
Okay, so Sarah and Catherine have a very specific request of you. We're fairly